started in here.
AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, along with Sam, for your Monday morning. I just tweeted out with the hashtag TCNT and the hashtag something different a better picture of our new in-studio decoration. Although I'm being told that any extra energy cost because of the Zima sign is going to come right out of my paycheck. So.
Yeah. And it's bright. I mean, it's like...
It's not that bright. It's not even neon. It's like a light.
I had to crank the air down because the light is heating up this room so much. Feels like a tanning booth.
All those UV rays.
Fellow co-hosts of lies. Vicious, vicious light. You're just jealous.
I'm turning a Donald Trump color.
You're just jealous because of my honesty about my love for Zima and the fact that I have a Zima sign. It's amazing.
Well, now we all do.
I'm going to be the most popular person in the building ever. That John guy, he's got a Zima sign. He's the best. That's what I say in my mind.
That's what you imagine everybody else is saying.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I imagine.
If that's what it takes to get you through the day, John.
It does.
Well, we were going to have our friend of the show and guest, Jeffrey O'Brien, in-studio lawyer extraordinaire. However, because of the Zima sign and his sensitivity to massive exposure to UV lights and radiation, I think he's decided to call in. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning. No, it's more of my aversion to promoting non-client liquor.
Or that.
You know, when Zima finally comes out in the summertime, none of you are invited to my party.
Big Zima party.
Maybe Jeff.
It's going to be like the loneliest party.
Jeff, let's start here. We've talked quite a bit about the removal of the, you know, forcing the GOP to get rid of the filibuster. I like Drew's theory that this is what the Democrats really wanted, but I'm curious to get your lawyer extraordinaire take, because to me it just seems like a colossally stupid move in the, you know, potential and pretty big potential chance that there might be another open seat that would be exponentially more important than the one that Gorsuch was filling.
Well, that's exactly right, John. And just to be clear, the Senate has not completely done away with the filibuster. It's done away with the filibuster for judicial appointments.
Okay.
And for cabinet nominees. So there's still, you know, for legislative matters, the filibuster survives. This is just simply for, the filibuster can no longer be used to block, you know, Harry Reid did this in 2013 and blocked it for, or, you know, blew up the filibuster for everything but the Supreme Court, and now, you know, Mitch McConnell and the Republicans just followed suit and carried out the logical conclusion where this was going. So if there's a legislative issue, you know, you remember the old movie, you know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, those days aren't dead. It's just for these appointees. And I think it's a good thing, because, you know, the president is supposed to get their judges, whether it be Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, or District Court, and the game playing that's been going on, and you know, both sides have been dealt with, have engaged in it. But to be fair, the Democrats started it back in 1987.
Sure.
Wasn't a filibuster, but with Robert Bork, just that kind of broke with the tradition that the president gets his judges.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think that there's anything. I think it's a head scratcher too as to why the Democrats did it. Perhaps they figured that it was going to happen anyways for the next appointee. So they were going to try to, you know, force it now so they could possibly use it as a campaign issue next year. I don't know. Perhaps it's just because their base is so anti-Trump that they just felt them almost like they could not approve anything that the president did, including a judge that, by everyone's account, both sides, was qualified. So I don't know why they did it, but yeah, you're right. There's huge implications for what this does for the next appointment.
Well, on a sort of narrative line, I suppose that if another seat were to open up and, you know, Trump were to try to replace that individual with somebody more conservative, they could still default back to, well, they forced us to get rid of it the last time. It doesn't change the fact that it would drastically change the makeup of the court. But I guess politically speaking, they would still have a bit of cover, just like they always do when they blame the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, there's still always cover if, you know, if they find, you know, the reason we have confirmation hearings, we don't just to put somebody on the court, is, you know, to vet the nominee to find out if they're qualified. I mean, if he put somebody up that wasn't qualified, certainly, you know, there's going to be political pressure not to confirm that person. But when you have someone like Judge Gorsuch, who was completely qualified, I mean, even the American Bar Association said he was qualified, and they are not a conservative mouthpiece. So, you know, they just look a little foolish on this one. The interesting thing is, it's very likely that the next seat to open and prior to next year's midterm elections is going to be Justice Kennedy. He was a Republican appointee. He was appointed by President Reagan. Ironically, he was the guy that ultimately filled the seat that Reagan had appointed Judge Bork for. So 30 years after this, all the shenanigans happened with blocking Supreme Court nominees, and this is like, it usually happens on one side. President Clinton, his appointees were, you know, the Republicans didn't block them, didn't filibuster them. President Obama, same thing. It only happens when there's a Republican president appointing a judge. So maybe that's part of what the calculation was on the GOP side, is we have nothing to lose because we approve a Democratic president's judges. That's, we follow the tradition. Maybe that was part of the calculation there. They figure, why not blow it up? Because it's only affecting us anyways.
And just to confirm, this is not a one-time, like, a suspension of the rule, right?
No.
This is
a permanent rules change.
Good. Because it's kind of a dumb rule when you think about it. I mean, if you have a majority in the Senate, should be able to use that majority to confirm the president's judges or not confirm the president's judges.
Yeah, the words the Constitution uses in terms of the Senate's role is advise and consent.
Right.
Not block somebody because you disagree with their judicial philosophy. That was not what this process was intended to do.
It's like when my boys are playing tag and you get too close to touch them and they go, oh, safe spot. Safe spot.
Yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
No, I got you.
Yell the word filibuster.
Yeah, filibuster. Oh, geez. We had those elections and all that money spent. And just they use it's like Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, when they use the, it's going to bug me now. Parlay. It's parlay.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
That was a stretch.
I don't know my Pirates of the Caribbean.
It was a better one than my tag joke, but parlay works. Oh, they invoked parlay. Can't do anything now.
So a story out of the LA Times here. Gorsuch's impact on the divided Supreme Court will begin immediately. Talking with a lawyer extraordinaire, friend of the show, Jeffrey O'Brien. What do you predict some of the earliest impacts are going to be with Gorsuch sitting and now being sworn in on the court?
Well, in terms of the early impact, I think this goes back to a discussion that Drew, you and I had even before John arrived in town last summer, was with these lower courts that were invalidating state laws. I think it started with the voter ID laws. You know, when you have a 4-4 tie at the Supreme Court, the lower court ruling would stand if there was not a majority consensus on taking the case and hearing it. And so I think, you know, some of these, you know, you can argue pro and con on the first executive order on the travel ban. The second one, the court's ruling on that was a little bit sketchier. I don't know that necessarily that courts are going to be overtly political in some of these rulings, knowing that they're going to ultimately be overturned, because judges don't like being overturned. So I think we may see a little less activism at the lower court level, knowing what the ultimate conclusion is going to be. And if the activism continues, then the effect of Justice Gorsuch being on the court now is going to be that you're going to see a lot of lower court rulings overturned.
Is Gorsuch and his decision making rare? I mean, it's tough to gauge, one, not knowing the background of a lot of judges. But when you look at the hearings that were taking place, and, you know, certainly you have to take a Gibraltar size grain of salt with the comments that were placed upon him by the Democrats who were going to oppose him regardless. But I'm just wondering, you know, from what we've seen from him, he seems to break from the norm. Is that your impression?
I don't think he breaks from the norm. I mean, he's a pretty, if you look at some of the, you know, the judges that are known around the country as being more of the constitutionalist or originalist thinking, I think he falls in, you know, he falls pretty much in line with that, where he has made a name for himself is in his rulings, criticizing or limiting the scope of the regulatory state. So I think if you see decisions here, there's, you know, longstanding rulings about giving agencies a lot of deference in terms of how they interpret, you know, their own rules and the statutes that apply to them. If anything, I think we may see that reined in during his time on the court. If we have a case like that, he may end up playing a role in that. But, you know, that's the cool thing about the Supreme Court is no one judge, no one justice, you know, controls the day. I mean, you've got nine different people with nine different opinions, and none of them are the same. And it's fascinating if you know anything about how they, you know, how they work and, you know, they hear these cases and then have the discussions behind the scenes, and that's how you end up with, you know, the result that you do. I mean, we talk a lot about how controversial the Supreme Court is, but in actuality, probably 75% to 80% of the cases they decide are unanimous opinions or pretty close to it.
When you look at what he's going to be dealing with, so you've got cases that this article out of the LA Times, cases that pit religious liberty against gay rights, test the limits of funding for church schools, and the challenge to California's restrictions on carrying a concealed gun in public, we'll know pretty quickly. You know, how he is going to be dealing with these particular issues based off of, you know, what he has to say. Because my understanding is once he's seated, they're going to start moving quickly on a bunch of these different items.
That's exactly right. I think, you know, it's talked a lot about replacing Justice Scalia with someone in the same mold. And I think that's what the president did here. Like we said, the real sea change in the court would happen if, in fact, Justice Kennedy decides he's done. And now you've got the proverbial swing vote now drifting, you know, maybe being replaced by someone more in the mold of a Scalia or a Thomas or an Alito or a Gorsuch. And I've read some reports that, you know, the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., and Justice Kennedy's son are friends. And I've heard some rumblings about back-channel discussions about when the timing of Justice Kennedy's retirement. So that could be coming soon, and it could now come off this list of, well, it used to be the list of 21 that candidate Trump submitted during the campaign. Now it'll be the list of 20 because Judge Gorsuch got picked off.
Right.
So I think that's really, and it goes back again, why did the Democrats do this? And maybe they figured this was inevitable anyway, that the Republicans would invoke the nuclear option with the replacement for Kennedy. I don't know. But I think that's going to be where the direction of the court really changes. And now you've got a group of five justices, including the Chief Justice, that are relatively young. So this is going to, these folks could be on the bench 30, 40 years.
One more quick question. I'm talking with Jeff O'Brien. You know, in the past with Scalia, you could guess, you know, how he was going to fall on particular votes pretty easily. It was not a given, but by any stretch. But you had a pretty good idea how he's going to fall on particular issues. Do you think Gorsuch is going to mirror that, or is it? Do you think it's going to be more of, we need to wait and see? What's your expectation?
I think we have to wait and see. You know, he doesn't. I mean, you can grasp a little based on his opinions at a lower court level, but, you know, and this is one of the things I thought was refreshing about him was during his hearings. You know, in his introduction speech, when he said, "If you agree with all the opinions that you've come up with, you're probably a bad judge." He seems to be that he really is going to do what a judge is supposed to do, is look at the facts and circumstances of that case, look at what the law says, and apply it to the case. And if it ends up with a result that, you know, that he doesn't like, so be it, but he applied the law to the facts. And so I think it's going to take some time to see how he becomes, you know, where he stands on the court. You look at Chief Justice Roberts. Everybody thought that we were getting a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, but you find out when especially some of the Obamacare rulings, his biggest concern is trying to not politicize the court, and so that you can see that in some of the opinions that he writes and some of the decisions where he votes is, you know, on very controversial issues, is he does not want the court to be used as a political issue amongst the two parties. So I think it's going to take some time to sort out where he sits. I mean, again, Justice Scalia was one of a kind. I mean,
yeah,
the way you read his opinions, his dissents, everything, you know, nobody will be like Justice Scalia. This is, you know, this what they have here is somebody who's close in his judicial philosophy, and I think that's what, you know, for those that voted for the for Donald Trump for president, with this issue in mind, that's as best as they can hope for.
Yeah, Jeffrey O'Brien, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure to have you on, and we'll turn off the Zima sign so we can get you in studio next time.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy.
All right,
talk to you soon.
I wouldn't want him.